When he delivered his Regensburg address back in 2006, Pope Benedict XVI set off a firestorm of anger. Not only had he criticized Islam and modern scientism, he had the temerity to suggest that what the world really needs is Catholicism. Nearly 15 years later, his words sound far less profligate than they do prophetic. Welcome again to the After Dinner Scholar, Wyoming Catholic College's weekly podcast about the great books and the liberal arts. I'm your host, Dr. Jim Tonkowicz. Of course, the Regensburg Address was not primarily about Islam or about scientism. Pope Benedict argued for the place of reason in human life. Without it, we either end up with subjective religiosity ungoverned by reason and leading toward fanaticism, or we limit reason to mathematics and physics, leading to a cold, calculated science that erases religion and morality, and with them, humanity. At the end of the semester, Dr. Michael Bolin was reading Pope Benedict's Regensburg Address with our Wyoming Catholic College seniors just before their graduation. Pope Benedict addressed Islam on the one hand and scientism on the other hand in the Regensburg Address. Why did he choose each of these and begin with Islam?
He says he was provoked to these thoughts by a particular document he was reading, which recounts a dialogue between a Christian emperor on the one hand, Byzantine emperor Manuel II, Palaeologus, and a Muslim scholar. And so it wasn't Islam per se that was his interest, but he was provoked to the thought by what he was reading. And there was at one point, there was a strain in Islamic thought that promoted the idea that God is simply wholly beyond human comprehension. And I mean that in the sense that there's nothing we could know about the way God must be based on reasoning about it. It's purely a question of revelation. And so the thought was, scholastic theology, the type of work that St. Thomas Aquinas is writing in the Summa Theologiae, couldn't really be carried out because you couldn't reason from revelation to new ideas or reason from natural phenomena to ideas about God. It was purely a question of God is unknowable. If he's told us something about himself, that's great, but reason can't do the job. And so in this speech, Pope Benedict is getting at the importance of reason, rationality in theology. And so he wants to critique the view that says God's nature is just wholly unknowable. And that particular strain in Islamic thought, it was one aspect of the critique there. On the other side, in the modern era, of course, we have scientism, as you mentioned, which that doesn't critique reason. It promotes reason, at least nominally. But Pope Benedict says that it diminishes the value of reason. So there's a belief that not only does reason start from empirical, sensible, observable things, but it can't get past those things. And so one can't reason to God from sensible things, not because God is wholly unknowable, but because reason itself is incapable of getting past the empirical. And so there's a different kind of critique of reason there. It's not that we need revelation, of course, for the scientist. There is no God at all, and reason just can't make that move. And so there are two different ways of devaluing reason that he wants to criticize in this speech.
Mm-hmm. Now, he argues for the right place of reason by discussing reason and the nature of God. Tell us about that.
Pope Benedict points us to the beginning of John's Gospel, which, of course, says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Greek word there that means word, logos, also signifies reason. And so in a way, John's Gospel begins with a claim that God is reason, and Pope Benedict says, it's quite striking, he says this is the final word on the biblical concept of God. So it's so fundamental, the idea that God is rational, and therefore, even though his nature does exceed our capacity, it doesn't exceed it in the sense that we can say nothing about it, but in the sense that we're always reasoning by analogy, but that God is wholly reasonable. And so if there's a purported doctrine of faith that is just contrary to reason, Benedict is saying, no, that's not compatible with the divine nature. And so we shouldn't try to separate the Greek philosophy, the Hellenization of Christianity that Benedict refers to in this speech, from Christianity itself. He's saying it's part of the authentic essence of Christianity that it incorporates the idea of God's rationality from Greek, the history of Greek thought.
Now, he mentioned Islam and having this idea that God is wholly unknowable. Isn't that a strain within Christian theology as well, somewhere along the history?
That's correct. It is not limited to Islam. We see it in the late scholasticism, beginning with Blessed Duns Scotus, who introduces that idea that Pope Benedict calls voluntarism. God could have done anything. His will is supreme, hence the name voluntarism. And so, again, for Duns Scotus, those that move towards revelation is the only true source there. Duns Scotus is very interested in reasoning. He's quite subtle in it, but nonetheless, he moves in that direction, and William of Ockham sort of draws that out further. And so, yes, it definitely becomes a strain in Christian thought as well. We see that versions of that today in fideistic Christian movements that don't see the importance of systematic theology or otherwise trying to reason about God.
How did reason end up as science only? What was the history of what he calls de-Hellenization?
It's kind of a big question, but I think in what we see in early modern philosophy, starting with thinkers like Descartes, is they're very struck by the fact that philosophers have never been able to achieve universal agreement. Every philosopher has his own ideas, and then the next philosopher comes along and says, nope, he's all wrong. Let me tell you the way the world is. And there's just never any agreement. I think that lack of agreement eventually led the philosophers, some philosophers at least, to suspect that the kinds of knowledge the philosophers are trying to achieve just can't be achieved. There's no hope in trying to reason beyond the sensible world. And I think that's the sort of the philosophical origins of scientism. And you put that together with the fact that sort of the scientific mode of reasoning, where you don't move beyond the empirical and you're not talking about God, but just about matter and the quantification of matter, it's very useful. It's technologically useful, of course, which is a motivating fact for a lot of people, because technology is good and useful. And the fact that it works is a sign of a kind of truth there. So the fact that we can make technology is a sign that, yeah, science has given us real knowledge about the world. And you contrast that with philosophy, where philosophy just doesn't seem useful in that way. And of course, that pushes people in the direction of saying, well, let's do the useful thing, the thing that is actually benefiting the human race. And I think that's the origin of scientism, is in that difficulty the philosophers had.
And benefiting my pocketbook.
Exactly, right. Yes.
There's not a lot of call. A philosopher is not a high-paying job, whereas technologist is.
That too, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, how is that de-Hellenization or the devaluation of reason evident in the world today? Does it, for example, have anything to do with the polarization not only in the United States, but across the world and even in the church?
I think so. So we already mentioned that even today in Christianity, you often come across a fideistic strain that sort of devalues systematic theology, and that's one version of it in Christianity. There's the scientism we were discussing. But you mentioned polarization, and I think we see it there too, because we have this political polarization in this country today, where you have these large groups of people who basically hate each other, and a frighteningly large numbers of them, 20% or more of one political group, are willing to say the other side are basically not human. It's pretty awful, right? And what you're seeing there is an unwillingness to dialogue, right? And so there's basically a manifestation of this rejection of reason, the idea that by entering into a dialogue with the other side and trying to use our human reason, we might be able to come to the truth about these questions. Instead, it's just one has to pick a side and stick with that regardless. So it seems to me, or we're seeing the fruits, as it were, of the rejection of reason in that political polarization. One particularly pernicious strain that one sees today is the rejection of civility, the idea that you shouldn't even try to talk to the other people, and that seems to go hand in hand with this loss of reason.
Yeah. All reason is rationalization.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's power. It's an attempt at power.
Right. Now, does Pope Benedict give us a solution? Does he propose, a third way, a golden mean?
Well, he ends the speech by speaking about the importance of what he calls the dialogue of cultures, which I think is maybe a larger version of what I was just saying about what we really need in terms of our political polarization. On the one hand, he says we can't lose sight of the strain of thought that has come into Christianity from the pagan Greeks, the importance of reason, the ideas of Socrates, who said, well, people call me an atheist because I can't believe the gods would fight and squabble the way the poets say, right? There's Socrates using his reason to say something about the divine nature. So he says we can't lose sight of that. Christianity needs that. On the other hand, it's a mistake to think there's no good anywhere other than the Greek culture. And so, yes, we need to take things from other people. And so if I haven't been exposed to this other culture, I'm not really in a position to say what good could I draw from them. I need to enter into some kind of communication to learn. So someone asks me, well, what can I learn from Buddhism? Well, I'm very far from an expert on that. I couldn't tell you offhand, but I realize that there's always some good in every view. There's going to be truth there. And if I enter into some kind of dialogue, I can probably, there's going to be something for me to learn from them, right? And he's encouraging that. The speech as a whole, it's addressed to faculty and scientists at the University of Regensburg, and he's talking about the importance of theology in the university curriculum, and he's more or less saying, if we don't keep reason in theology, if we de-Hellenize it and make it purely theistic, then it wouldn't have a place in the curriculum. But because it is essentially rational, it does have a place, and it needs to engage other views.
Why read this at the end of senior year? What do we hope the seniors will take from it? Does it somehow synthesize their experience at Wyoming Catholic College?
Another point that Benedict makes, besides the idea that God is reason drawn from the Gospel of John, is he makes reference to the name that God gives himself in the book of Exodus in the Old Testament when he says, I am. And he says that another striking thing about the Old Testament is that it identifies God as being. God won't give himself a particular name. He's not Uranus or Gaia. He's not the heavens or the earth. He just is. And so there's this idea that God is the fullness of being. And that it does provide a kind of synthesis. We've been studying metaphysics in this course, which is the study of being as being, and we're trying to see how that discipline inevitably points us toward the knowledge of the first being, right? The being, subsisting being, which is what God is. Realizing, thinking of God in that way helps us see every bit of knowledge, whether it be literature or science or anything else, is in some way an attempt to get at the being of things. And to that extent, since it's getting at the being which is derived from the first being, it too is pointing to God. So it is a kind of synthesis. St. Thomas Aquinas has a wonderful line where he says, every knower in knowing anything implicitly knows God. And the account of God that Benedict is giving this speech, I think, points us to that. So I think it's a great note to end on.
While we rejoice in the new possibilities opened to humanity, said Pope Benedict at the conclusion of the Regensburg Address, we also see the dangers arising from these possibilities, and we must ask ourselves how we can overcome them. We will succeed in doing so only if reason and faith come together in a new way. If we overcome the self-imposed limitation of reason to the empirically falsifiable, and if we once more disclose its vast horizons. In this sense, theology rightly belongs in the university and within the wide-ranging dialogue of sciences, not merely as a historical discipline in one of the human sciences, but precisely as theology, as inquiry into the rational faith. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.